Good afternoon. You are tuned in to KTUO News and KRNFM in Juneau, live local radio from Alaska's capital city. Today, in the afternoon, we'll learn about the Pick, Click, and Commit Gift program. We'll find out about Saturday's meeting of the Friends of Admiralty Island and Sunday's community celebration for Veterans for Peace. We'll also get a preview of Bill Fleming's Alaska Bike Trek. And Dancy the Attorney will be here with news about arts happenings during Arts Hop. That Writer's Almanac, Vernon and more on the Juneau afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, partly cloudy skies with isolated snow showers. Low temperatures around 30 degrees. Forecast for Friday, numerous rain and snow showers. About 1 inch of snow expected.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum signed an emergency evacuation order Wednesday for the main camp where people are opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline, located on a flood zone near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. The order states safety concerns due to unseasonably warm temperatures, which have accelerated snowmelt in the area. Burgum says the order is effective now and is in line with the federal order for people to vacate the camp by next Wednesday. U.S. South Dakota Senator Mike Rounds has reintroduced a bill to eliminate outdated laws related to the federal government's relationship with the tribes. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Jeremy Ludeman has more.
The Respect Act, or repealing existing substandard provisions encouraging conciliation with tribes act, made it out of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs last year, but the bill did not come to a vote. Rounds says the clauses he wants to take out of federal law are offensive.
It was full of really overt racism in the laws themselves. These are the laws that, you know, basically said Native American kids were going to be taken away from their parents, and if their parents objected, they would be, you know, they would not be able to get supplies on the reservation. They would be forced back into work areas and so forth. But there's a whole series of really items that today we look at and there's just no place for them, and yet they're still on the books.
Brown says the Respect Act is also an opportunity to improve tribal relations.
It sends a good message saying, look, we're taking a second look at how the federal government and the Native American populations across the United States, and reinforcing the need for consultation when we talk about things that are going on the reservations.
Brown says he hopes to get the bill through the Committee on Indian Affairs and the full U.S. Senate more quickly. For National Native News, I'm Jeremy Ludeman.
President Brian Clattesby of the National Congress of American Indians used this week's State of Indian Nations address to voice concerns about plans to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Matt Laszlo has a story from Washington.
More than 70% of Indian country is rural, and that makes accessing health care more difficult for most tribes, according to President Clattesby. He says that's why tribes are bracing for a repeal of so-called Obamacare.
You know, it's no secret that the Republicans have passed 50 or 60 bills to repeal Obamacare that will have an impact on tribal communities, especially those tribal members who don't live in their areas, that live outside of their tribal communities, that rely on this.
Still, Clattesby says he's been assured that lawmakers are looking to protect tribes.
We haven't seen it in writing yet from individuals that say that the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, which was passed along with the Affordable Care Act in 2010, will not be ripped apart, taken away, or repealed.
The new chair of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, John Hovind of North Dakota, says even in tight budget times, the federal government owes tribes more.
We need to do much better on health care. And there's much we can do with the Indian Health Services. In these difficult budget times, we have to be mindful to restore a strong financial position for the country so that we don't burden future generations with unsustainable debt.
That said, Hovind questions why the Indian Health Services is returning money to the federal government while tribes still struggle with access to health care, which he says makes no sense.
Yet right now, while it is returning millions of dollars back to the Treasury, there are many unmet tribal health care needs. Now, there are many good and hardworking people in the Indian Health Services, but improvements are needed.
Republicans in Congress are still debating how to reform Obamacare, and the debate is showing an internal divide in the GOP over what the nation's health care system needs. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Fred Jones Jr. Museum of Art at the University of Oklahoma. Photosynthesis. New photographs by Navajo Will Wilson plus early works by Edward Curtis. Photosynthesis through April 2nd. Info at fjjma.ou.edu. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's about 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Our first guest is comes to us from the phone in Anchorage, Sophia Fouquet, here on the air talking about the Permanent Fund. Thank you.
Hey there.
And you work with Pick, Click, and Give people.
That's correct. I am the program manager for Pick, Click, Give. So if you have any questions and you call our line, I'll be the gal you chat with.
About how many Permanent Fund checks were printed last year?
You know, so the Permanent Fund checks actually come from the state of Alaska. So although we do not have a total number, we do know that as of April 1st last year, well over 550,000 people had applied for their dividends.
What percentage of that goes to charities?
Well, so for the percentage of people that apply for their dividends, only those that choose to give through Pick, Click, Give will actually end up giving anything to their local nonprofits. As far as the percentage of Alaskans, I believe about 5.5% of Alaskans who filed for their permanent fund last year ended up giving to Pick, Click, Give nonprofits, which was really, really excellent.
How does the program work?
So Pick, Click, Give, in a nutshell, is essentially a way that people can connect their permanent fund dividend checks with nonprofits that are doing good within local Alaskan communities. So you go online, you file for your permanent fund dividend, and as soon as you've done that, there's an option that you are asked if you would like to Pick, Click, Give. And when you do that, it connects you with nearly 700 nonprofits across the state that are all working, again, locally, so that you can make sure that before it even reaches your paycheck, you're using your permanent fund dividend to help out your community.
When's the deadline this year?
The deadline to file for the permanent fund dividend is March 31st, and as long as you have filed by that time, you can actually go in and add a pledge all the way to the end of August.
That sounds easy.
It is so easy. We're always trying to make it as safe, convenient, and easy as possible so people can make those big differences in their communities.
And such a small amount, comparatively speaking, that people contribute as little as $15.
So it's as little as $25, and you are absolutely right that it makes such a huge difference. You know, we figure if 90% of the people in the state of Alaska filed for a permanent fund dividend and all gave $25, just $25 through Pick, Click, Give, we would raise about $16.6 million in 1 year. So we're always telling people, no matter what, even if you already filed, you can still go back in, choose to make a pledge through Pick, Click, Give, and that little amount is so huge and makes such a difference for our local nonprofits. It's so worth it.
How long has the Pick, Click, and Give program been in existence?
So it came into existence in 2009 and then became a permanent part of the permanent fund dividend structure in 2012. So we're a relatively new program, but since the inception, we've already raised about $17 million for nonprofits across the state of Alaska.
Do people who get their checks out of town or out of state, can they still take part in the program?
They absolutely can. It's always funny going back in and letting the nonprofits know which zip codes have given to their cause, and sometimes we'll see, you know, ones from all across the U.S.
And how many organizations in Juneau take advantage of the program?
In Juneau, we have 73 nonprofits, which is really excellent and just an amazing way to show that if you want to give micro-locally, not even just within the state of Alaska, but within the community you live in, especially in Juneau, there is more than enough opportunities to choose from causes that really mean a lot to you personally.
When people call up and say they'd like to donate and be part of the program, what's their first question?
Oh, man. Probably how to apply. You know, we really love working with nonprofits because our structure is aimed at nonprofits, you know, small through large. So no matter your size, we really try and make it easy so that we are providing tools and trainings and really just making it easy for the various nonprofits all across the state to reach out to the people who connect with their cause, and letting them know that there is a way that they can easily give. So if you have a tie to Barrow but you're in Ketchikan, it's still so easy. You can absolutely make a difference no matter where you are, and we absolutely try to give the nonprofits the tools they need to let people know that.
I was trying to add a question here, and I'd say my time, there it went.
You know, one of the funny things that we're actually, something that's sort of interesting that I'd love to chat about is the fact that we just rolled out Double Your Dividend, and that is a really neat program that is available to anyone who makes a pledge through PickClick Give. And again, if you've already given, great, and if you've already filed but haven't yet made your pledge, you can still go back in. And this year we're going to have 5 winners, and so if you are a winner through Double Your Dividend, you will not only receive a double dividend for yourself, but you will get to choose a PickClick Give nonprofit of your choice to receive a double dividend. So it's a really phenomenal way to not only incentivize Alaskans to get out there and support their community nonprofits, but it's also a great way for us to give back to those nonprofits who are doing so much good locally.
What's the easy way to find out how organizations here in Juneau are taking part in the program?
If you just hop online, you can go to pickclickgive.org, and there is a very easy button. It just says find out more about the search organizations, and from there you can search by cause, you can search by city. So whatever your interest is, if it's searching for nonprofits locally or if it's searching for specific causes you care about, you can definitely see all the nonprofits as well as a little bit of information on each one. So again, that's just pickclickgive.org, and then there's a big button on the top that says search organizations.
Now, you mentioned the minimum amount is $25. If you want to spread out your PFD over several organizations, is the minimum still $25?
It is. So each pledge is $25, but that's a great point that you bring up, that the ease and the beauty of this program is that you are able to support as many nonprofits as you'd like. So for $100, one easy place, you're on the PickClick Give website. You can just go click, 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 and now 4 of your favorite nonprofits have all been supported, and you were able to do it without having to follow up with each one individually. So that's really the beauty of the program, is it allows you to support so many people in one place.
Sophia, thanks for talking about the PFD Click, Pick, Click, and Give program. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgot to ask.
I think that will do it. We're so excited, and we've been really impressed by the generosity Alaskans have continued to show to their local nonprofits. And we, again, just ask that everyone remembers that $25 per person makes a huge difference for those nonprofits who are helping out your local friends and family within your community.
So, yeah, thanks so much for being on here with me today.
All right. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 16th of February, 2017. It was on this date, 1778, John Adams prepared to set sail to France. He was going over to convince the French government to lend its aid to the American Revolution. He was there to replace an ambassador named Silas Dean, who was suspected of trying to profit personally from trade negotiations and also of passing inside information to the British. So John Adams went. He took his 10-year-old son, John Quincy Adams, on the trip. The ship ran into bad weather on the journey. The main mast was struck by lightning. Some men were injured. One was killed, but eventually the Adamses arrived in France safe and sound about 6 weeks later. It's the birthday of an Adams descendant, Henry Adams, born Boston, 1838. John Quincy was his grandfather. Henry Adams, best known to us for his autobiography, The Education of Henry Adams, written in the third person, funny and cynical. It's the birthday of the novelist and short story writer Richard Ford, born in Jackson, Mississippi, 1944, best known for his novels about the character of Frank Bascom, a former sports writer turned real estate agent. Richard Ford went to college, then law school, then decided to be a writer. He sold two novels, got good reviews, did not sell very well, decided to hang it up and become a sports writer, did that for a few years, and then started writing a novel about a sports writer, Frank Bascom, whose life is a mess. The book The Sports Writer came out in 1986. It was a big bestseller. Richard Ford has now spent over 30 years writing about Frank Bascom, taking him from marriage to divorce and through the death of a child and into the arms of various women. Ford, whose process begins with keeping notes on hotel stationery, little pieces of paper, types them up, puts them in ring-bound notebooks, which he keeps in the freezer just in case the house might burn down. Richard Ford said, fictional characters aren't people. Characters are eminently mutable, cobbled together bits of language, reflecting the this's and that's of a writer's life, memory, fantasy, fears, desires, suppressed experience, shards of speech, half-noticed newspaper squibs, overhearings, mishearings. He said, I like the part of being a writer in which you don't feel the sides of anything. You don't see the beginning, and you don't see the end. You're just in it. Here's a poem for today by Sonia Johansson, The Truth About Fences. They only hold in those who are willing to be held. Horses prove it all the time, unlatching gates in their idle moments. I once saw a cornered ewe leap a 6-foot buck fence because she didn't feel like going where the border collie wanted her to go. She wasn't even afraid. When they were young, I took the children to the state animal farm, every inhabitant, begging raven, crippled otter, trained bear, had become too used to humans. The biggest draw was the cow moose. We gaped as she browsed in a swale behind the tissue paper of some hurricane fencing. The game warden explained it wasn't so much that they kept her as that she didn't mind staying. The Truth About Fences by Sonia Johansson, from Trees in Our Dooryards, published by Redbird Chapbooks and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The 18 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into June Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio are Rafe Astorino and Phil Smith, here to talk about Veterans for Peace. Rafe, we're going down.
Hi there.
Hi.
So, for people who do not know, could you give us a history of the Veterans for Peace, please?
Real quickly, yeah, I will explain that Veterans for Peace is a national organization. It started in New England in 1984 when some veterans were thinking that maybe in addition to protesting war, that they ought to be positive seeking peace. And they put together an organization that is now, as I say, nationwide, but it does most of its work through local chapters. And here in Juneau, we started to put together our chapter 15 years ago in late 2002. As we saw the Iraq War coming, a number of us felt that our patriotic duty involved stopping it and trying to intervene in the decisions that were being made. And so we put an ad in the paper. We had a few guys show up, and after a month or so, we had enough signed up for formal designation as a chapter. And we have been working as a chapter ever since on various projects and priorities having to do with advancing the cause of peace, protesting the war in Iraq in particular, as well as other conflicts, and giving our politicians hell when they deserve it, or what we considered that they deserved it. We have been quite active at all kinds of things in town. Just a few things that recur that people may be aware of is we have, since 2003, had a float in the 4th of July parade. And we normally have some connection to the 4th of July theme and try to make points. That's one example of the type of things we do. We have had a radio program here on K2 for several years called Peace Talk, which runs it on Focus on Community. KT's program on Monday evening, every third Monday, is when we are on normally. Got to keep your eyes open, though. It doesn't always happen, and sometimes the dates change.
But how many members do you have?
We have in Juneau probably about 40 who are actually signed up. We've got 15 to 20 who show up at the meetings and who, you know, carry the water and do the work and so forth. But you can see most of the members gathered on the 4th of July and other events. So, yeah, we come together frequently.
Do you have to be a vet to be a member?
No. You can be a vet, for sure, of any, you know, U.S. armed force or any foreign armed force, for that matter. If you're a Canadian vet, you can join up. But we also have a category of membership called associate members, and those are people who believe in what we do and who want to help, but who are not themselves veterans. They come to the meetings. They participate fully. Technically, they can't vote for leadership. That is restricted to the veteran members. But we have, unfortunately, never had the problem of having several candidates for one office. So the associate vets are, as far as we're concerned, they're totally veterans for peace.
Me, Pastorino, what made you decide to be a member?
I'm an associate member, actually. I've worked with veterans for quite some time. My first career was as a defense attorney. So I worked with veterans in Vietnam, Korea, Japan. And subsequently, I became a psychologist. So I worked with veterans in terms of care. So when we moved back to Juneau here 5-6 years ago, I had the opportunity to meet the local chapter and to begin to do some work with them. And it's been a real pleasure for me because I believe in the values that they stand for peace. And the event that's coming up this Sunday is sort of a celebration of those efforts over the last 15 years.
And the best way to celebrate peace is by pizza.
Yes. Yeah, pizza and peace. And, you know, when you think about it, our country is seemingly a bit divided right now. And so this is a time of opportunity to celebrate peace, which actually reflects being in a state of feeling secure, feeling safe, feeling that you are free to move about and do what you would like, that you can express yourself openly and freely. And these are things to celebrate, and they're universal. And regardless of what party affiliation or what group you may be from, these values are all found wrapped up in peace. And so Sunday's event is meant to celebrate the efforts of the local veterans to emphasize the importance of that over these past 15 years.
And that event is Sunday. Where is it going to be held?
It'll be at the Jack at the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council building across the street. And it is really, it's open to everybody in the community. That's one of the reasons we want to do it. It's a form of outreach. It's a form of information. And it's a form of our way, not only looking at ourselves and saying, God, we did these great things, but also to say thank you to the Juneau community, who in many ways have been very, very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
One example is the Peace Park up on 3rd, where Jim Fowler's sculpture has been put in place and dedicated. It's the
Bishop Kinney.
Bishop, yeah. Michael H. Kinney Peace Park. And we were quite instrumental in getting that approved through the city and then getting the sculpture put up. And a lot of people contributed, either money, time, effort. Another major event that we have sponsored recently was Emmanuel Jal, who is one of the lost boys from Sudan, who was an 8-year-old, was firing rifles, thought he hated Mohammedans and Muslims, and he escaped, a remarkable story by itself. But he is now a rock star and a hip-hop artist, and he travels the country singing a song of peace. And we helped with People for Peace and Justice. We co-sponsored his performances here in town. He did special performances for the high school. He did a evening performance for the whole community. And, you know, it's things like that aren't always all that visible, and they're not always a function of us being on the street yelling about something. We do that occasionally, and I think one of my most memorable yelling at something was several years ago when Senator Ted Stevens refused to vote to outlaw torture by the CIA and other aspects of the U.S. government. And we called him out on it. He was at the Capitol, and we had a group out with signs and made him at least think about it. That fall, he lost the election. I'm not sure there's any connection there. But, this was an example of people organizing, speaking out, saying, wait a minute, you're violating some of the basic tenets of the things that we believe in as Americans. And we wouldn't let it pass. So, you know, the whole Iraq war was like that. And so we felt a need and an obligation to speak up. Part of our mission is to assist people who have been victims of war, including fellow veterans. Ray has done a lot of work with our difficult to do, but our efforts to contribute to the discussion and the awareness of post-traumatic stress disorder that a lot of GIs go through, and that you worry about the suicide rate and so forth. So we're sort of pretty much all over the landscape, but in particular on Sunday, to come back to that, we really, really would like to see a full house of good citizens who care about these things and who are curious or want to come and complain, or we're going to have an open mic. We're going to have an open pizza bar, and so a lot of people can get a lot of free food and a lot of good conversation and a little bit of greater insight into who we are, what we do, what we have done, and perhaps what we hope to do.
I'd like to touch a little bit on the scholarship program that you've...
Yes, I always... That's automatic. We do that every year. We've done it every year since. Since we started, $1,000 scholarship to a senior, a graduating senior, and now it's open to all of Southeast. So it's normally an essay-type contest, and we have a group that judges these things, and some lucky student gets a $1,000 scholarship to the school of their choice. So, you know, we're busy.
I'm talking with Phil Smith and Ray Pastorino about the Veterans for Peace Pizza and Peace Dinner.
Pizza and Peace, 1 o'clock, Sunday at the Jack.
Anything you'd like to add?
I think just to add that when we say everybody is invited, that's very important because it's important to generate meaningful dialogue between people, regardless of their position. We have to learn how to bridge these differences and to speak in new ways that allows us to understand one another. That demands us to learn how to do that. But This is just another opportunity of coming together and celebrating, and an opportunity to have some good dialogue.
Chris and Mary, thank you for coming down to the station.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Two, one, two, three, four.
Thursday, Ms. Pesky, you're tuned into June afternoon. Our next guest in the studio is Bill Fleming. He's giving a talk tonight at Cycle Alaska at 5:15, all about his bicycle trek around Alaska. Bill, thank you for being on the station today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So where do you go? Is it some kind of Mondo trip?
Well, it was kind of a Mondo trip. It's actually part of an event called the Iditarod Trail Invitational. It starts in Kinnick, and it follows the Iditarod Trail to Nome. So it kind of built up to it, and I said last year that was the year I wanted to do it. So I went ahead and signed up and made it all the way.
Is it a race or just a run?
Well, you know, it's technically supposed to be a race, but I don't think people really treat it that way, and I'm not sure that you really can treat it that way. It's really more about just getting to the finish. So sure, they keep track, but I don't think any of the participants necessarily treat it much like a race.
Tell me about your bicycle.
Oh yeah, the bicycle. Well, you know, I took a fat tire bike, and I went with the absolute widest possible rims, and the widest tires as well. I wasn't real sure what kind of conditions I was going to run across, so I took. I figured, well, I better be set up for the widest range of conditions possible. So I kind of tricked my fat bike out with really wide tires and really wide rims. Yeah.
Is that an expensive kind of bicycle?
Well, it can be. You know, I think it's probably pretty much like anything else. You can spend as much or as little as you want to. But I own a bike store, so I get a little bit of a break on that stuff. So I was able to kind of take the good stuff with me. But still, I think overall the bike ended up weighing in at around 50 pounds, so it was still kind of heavy.
And you just camp out?
Well, you camp out in some places. The stretch between Ophir and Ruby is about 200 miles, and it took me 3 days to work my way through there. And so, yeah, I was bivvied out in that area. But in a lot of areas, you're staying in schools. You know, once you get past Ruby, you're pretty much moving village to village, and a lot of times there are shelter cabins along the way, or you stay in the school. You just let the principal know ahead of time that you're coming, and you're able to stay in the school for a little bit of money.
How long was each leg that you took?
Well, the total trip, I measured it on I had a little bike computer on my bike, and so the total thing was over 1,000 miles, like 1,030 miles, I think, and it took me 12 days. But we had really good conditions. I felt kind of lucky about that last year.
Memorable moments.
Well, there were a lot of them. But I think, falling into overflow was one. I was on my way to the Rainy Pass Lodge, and, you know, it was one of those beautiful days, and there was a lot of snow, and I was just about ready to put on my gaiters because I thought, well, you know what, I should put my gaiters on because this looks kind of – but it was nice. It was kind of a warm day, so I and about 90 seconds later, I fell through the snow into overflow. So I ended up having to sit out once I got to the lodge and wait for my gear to dry. But, you know, potentially kind of a serious situation. But I think the whole experience was sort of overwhelming. You know, you look at one specific moment, and it's hard to pick one specific moment because the whole thing was just such an amazing experience. You know, as part of Alaska, I've lived my whole life in Alaska and have never seen that. And you really begin to appreciate the scope of where we live. It's really pretty overwhelming. Yukon River, first time I'd ever seen the Yukon River. The Kaltag Portage Trail, there's a lot of history there, and it's absolutely beautiful. And going up the coast and crossing the sea ice to Koyuk, across the Norton Sound, was amazing. Just so many amazing moments. Just absolutely a beautiful trip.
Did you have to do any research or a lot of research to do this?
Well, oh yeah, I can tell you, I had a lot of I have a lot of respect for this trail, and you know. Honestly, I was probably sort of intimidated by the whole thing. So I did as much research as I could. And actually, the Iditarod Sled Dog Race website is a phenomenal source of information. And it gives you a real detailed description from checkpoint to checkpoint. So I pored over that and talked to as many people as I could to get as much information about the trail that I could.
Will you do another trip like this?
It sort of gets under your skin. It's a little addictive, I think. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I'd done the ride to McGrath quite a few times. And the only thing left now is the southern route because, you know, they alternate between years. And so I would like to do it again. Yeah. I like doing those kinds of trips. I like being out there in the wilderness.
Would you call this a dangerous trip?
I would say, well, you know, when you make it, you don't think that it's so dangerous, but there's lots of things that can go wrong. And, yeah, I think you need to take it seriously and you need to know what you're doing. You know, and you have to have the proper gear. But I wouldn't necessarily say that it's incredibly dangerous. It can be dangerous, but when you make it, you look back and you think, okay, well, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was.
Now, is this some sort of a organized race or adventure?
You might call it loosely organized. There's no support, and you're just supposed to call in from the villages to let the race directors know kind of how you're doing. It's nothing as formal as the Iditarod Sled Dog Race. It's more kind of just on your own. And so you get to one of the checkpoints and you call the race director and you say, hey, I'm still alive. I made it this far. I'm going to leave tomorrow.
How many other people were you sharing the experience with?
Well, it was a record year last year. And there were, I believe, 13 people that signed up to do the whole trip to Nome. And usually in any given year, you don't see that many people. But definitely that event has gained in popularity. But in years past, it's only just been a handful, maybe 3, 4, or 5 people that attempt to make it to Nome. And, of course, there's no guarantee that you're going to make it. So there's been years where nobody's made it to Nome. So,
was there a big celebration if they finished for you? Or was it just as people?
Well, it was a little bit of a, you know, you show up and the people see you coming and they're excited. Well, you know, I finished around 10:30 at night, and I was riding down Front Street and toward the Burled Arches, and then I think all these drunk people started coming out of the bars. They were yelling at me and clapping, and I didn't expect that. I thought it would be a little bit more low-key. So, yeah, I guess you could say there was a little bit of celebration there, but it was kind of funny. But it was just kind of a sense of relief to be done, you know, at that point.
You had fat tires. Were they equipped with studs?
That's a great question. And the way I did it was I had studded tires on my bike, but I only I half studded them. I didn't have studs in every single hole because I figured I wouldn't need the studs all the time. So to save weight, I took half the studs out. Yeah, and it worked perfectly.
What kind of advice would you give somebody who wants to do a trip like this?
Well, this really was the culmination of a lot of winter cycling that I've done. I'd say it's kind of an inspiring event, but you know, start small. Do some of the other events first and build up to it. But, you know, Alaska is so huge, there's no need to just do that trip. There's so many different options that you could do. And I know people that have ridden their fat bikes all over the state through areas you wouldn't think that you could.
I might as well. What's the name of your bike shop?
Oh, it's the Trek Bicycle Store in Anchorage. Yeah.
All right, Bill Fleming, thanks for coming down to the station today. Is there anything you'd like to add that I forgot to ask?
I think that's going to do it. Thanks for having me.
This is Bird Note. The image of this dapper black-capped chickadee frequently adorns Christmas cards and bags of birdseed. But the black-capped is only one of 7 species of chickadees found in North America. All are variations on a bold and engaging model, and each calls chickadee with its own regional accent. While you'll find the black-capped chickadee across the northern U.S. into Canada, its close cousin, the Carolina chickadee, holds sway in the southeast. Hike among conifers in the Rockies, and you'll be greeted by the husky voice of a mountain chickadee. Or listen in the dense spruce forests of Canada for the call of the boreal chickadee. A chickadee of resplendent brown, the chestnut-backed chickadee, calls the Pacific Northwest home. The Mexican chickadee just nudges into the mountains of southeast Arizona. And the gray-headed chickadee turns up in the extreme northwest corner of the continent, north of the Arctic Circle. No matter which chickadee you find, take a moment to enjoy one of nature's most delightful creatures. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
What is civility? Does it matter? Are Alaskans more civil? The University of Alaska Southeast MPA program hosts a discussion of civility in the last frontier with Alaskan leaders Mayor Mike Navarre, journalist Dermot Cole, and Senators Anna McKinnon and Berta Gardner. Join the discussion in person at 360 on February 23rd at 5:30 p.m. or join the discussion online at 360north.org.
It's a quarter before the hour, and you're attending to Juno Afternoon. Our last guest is Nancy DeCherney, here to talk about art events in the capital city.
And we have a few of them. Of course we do. Actually, there are a few things even this evening. There's Eagan Lecture Hall has Before the Flood at 7 p.m. tonight. It's a free screening of Leonardo DiCaprio's new documentary about climate change. There's also tango dancing and all that sort of stuff. Tomorrow is the all-day Great Backyard Bird Count, So I guess you can, it looks like it's going to be a nice day, be a great day to go outside and count birds, count for at least 15 minutes and enter your data online. You can get more information about this at our on our calendar. There is the Art of Place, Learning from Our Elders. That's at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning until 12:30. It's a lecture and demonstration series. Della Cheney will be sharing her knowledge of weaving, and Ed Koons will share his knowledge of carving. So more information about that at uas.alaska.edu. It's 6 p.m. It is the Red Cross 100 Years of Flirting with Disaster celebration. That will be at the Elizabeth Peratrovich Hall, and there are tickets available still for this. You can get them at the bookstores or at the Jack or online. This is the celebration in Juneau, the home of the original charter, I guess. Bill Walker will be there, dinner by Abby's Kitchen. There'll be a DJ, silent auction, and a live auction for a Holland America cruise and Alaska Airlines. So stop on down for that and help support the Red Cross. There's a lecture, fireside lecture, out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center about ancient sea levels. So it's James Bechtol explains how ancient glaciers affected southeast Alaska's sea levels, which are hundreds of feet higher than found on mountain slopes. So there's also a ballroom dance over at the Jack, and they are having a random acts of kindness dance. So come on over for that at 7:30. That's a pay-as-you-can situation, always good. The proceeds that they end up with come help support the building. This is your last weekend to see They Don't Talk Back, the play that Frank Katas wrote. It's over at the Perseverance Theater, and if you haven't seen it yet, I really urge you to take time this weekend to go see it. It's a wonderful, amazing performance, amazing play, and it's exciting that it's written by somebody here from Juneau. Over the weekend, you're still counting birds. There is a 12 by 12 artworks workshop with Patty Hutchinson Jupi at the, it's going to be at the Jack, but sponsored by the City Museum, and it's for kids and adults who want to participate in the annual 12 by 12 art exhibit. This year's exhibit theme is ink, and she will be teaching a Chinese painting technique, which she learned when she was in Taipei. There's Friends of Admiralty annual meeting at the Yacht Club at 1:30. There's live acoustic bluegrass at Bullwinkle's downtown at 4 o'clock every Saturday afternoon. There's a barn dance at St. Anne's Parish Hall at 7:30. Odette Edgar is teaching a calling contra dance to live music by Full Circle, which is Greg Berger and Mary DeSmet. And at 8 p.m., I think it is, and at 10 p.m., two showings. Mistress Gigi Monroe presents Lust at the Rendezvous, revealing the sexier side of drag. So this sounds like a whole lot of fun. Go on down there. I think it's $8, and there are two performances, as I mentioned. So let's see what else we got going on. There's on Sunday a restaurant thing going on. Restaurant week. That's exciting. I like to eat, you know. So that's the thing to be doing. There's a ukulele jam over at T.K. McGuire's. There's a peace and pizza celebration from 1 to 5 at the Jack. Free pizza and an open mic and Jack music. So come on down. I think that's sponsored by the Juneau Peace Coalition. I can't remember.
Veterans for Peace.
Yeah, Veterans for Peace. Then let's see, on Monday, we continue counting birds. There's Locals Night at Hangers on the Wharf, Skiers Friday at Hangers. Sounds like it's the same thing. We have also an Arts Roundtable on Tuesday, the 21st. I'm not sure what our topic is going to be this year, this month. It's an opportunity for all of the artists to get together, or people in the arts community, and just discuss things of interest, find out what's going on around the community. We have a Raptor Boards meeting happening at 5:30 on Wednesday. There's Cass Holman doing, he's a toy designer, and he's going to be at 360 downstairs here, full-time industrial faculty at Rhode Island School of Design. So should be interesting. Rain Country Fly Fishers at the Thunder Mountain Library at 7 p.m. on Wednesday. And the old-time music jam. So it's couple of really important things. If you haven't seen the play, go see it, and you can help out with the there's ballroom dancing and the Red Cross thing. Got a few things to do.
So the big question, is there life after wearable art?
Sometimes it's a little slower. Sluggish life. We're coming back. It's coming back.
And you got a gospel celebration coming up.
We have gospel celebration and Motown. We were just getting all organized for that. The gospel workshops will start on the 27th. Eustace and Bobby are back in town. And then they'll do their Motown thing on Friday, the 3rd of March. And the gospel celebrations will be on the 5th. And in collaboration with the Juno Black Awareness, they will be offering a scholarship dinner called Dinner on the Ground, fried chicken, homemade potato salad, mac and cheese, all the really good stuff. So you can go to the concert and then have dinner, or have dinner and then go to the concert. It's going to be a lovely Sunday on the 5th. I want to see you. Need everybody to sign up to sing, too. It's time for that.
I've heard great things about it.
It's wonderful. All the people that I've ever seen, it's getting to the point where often we have, it seems like we have more people singing than in the audience, because people have so much fun with this particular workshop. So come on down and get signed up for that.
Anything else going on that you want to let people know about?
Probably, but my brain has gone away with the wearable art thing. It just sort of disappeared. We have Kahuanui Lui or something. I can't even pronounce it. A Hawaiian swing band coming in March as well. So a lot of things still coming up. Scholarships and individual artist grants and gallery applications will be going online fairly shortly. People should be getting ready for that. I'm a little behind in posting them, but they're coming up. So we want everybody to get out for that, too. And, you know, summer's starting. The daffodils are out. I don't know if you noticed.
I neglected to see them.
Okay.
Well, where are they?
They're out in front of the Jack.
No one saw them.
Yes. Yes. So anyway, if you want to get more information about any of these things, you can go to our calendar, which is at jahc.org, or the KTOO calendar, which is ktoo.org, and you can get all the everything that's going on. It's great.
Nancy, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
This month's Barn Dance is this Saturday, February 18th, 7:30 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall on 5th Street downtown. There's always live music, and Full Circle String Band will be on hand to play Celtic and New England tunes, and Odette Edgar will teach and call contra dances. As always, you don't need any experience or a partner, just be ready for a fun and friendly atmosphere. Discounts for age 25 and under, and free for JVs and AmeriCorps. Sponsored by the Juno Folk Dancers with help from KRNN. Barn Dance, Saturday.
Saturday, March 18th, 8 a.m. till noon at Thunder Mountain High School is the next Juno Health Fair, sponsored by Bartlett Regional Hospital. If volunteering is your passion, consider helping out at the health fair. There are medical and non-medical areas that you could participate in. If you're interested, email Laura at lstats@bartletthospital.org or call 796-8918. Tomorrow night, June afternoon, Andy Klein will be your host. We'll talk poetry. Patricia Weary will be with worried about the backyard bird count. We get a preview of the Friday Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center at Southeast Sea Level Secrets by Jim Bachtal. And also we get an update of happenings at Bartlett. That live at 4 on KTO, live at 3 on KTO, repeated at 4 on KNN, on demand by KTO.org. Coming up next is All Things Considered, 7 o'clock. Left. It's happening tomorrow. Today at 7 o'clock, we'll be celebrating Black History Month with a program in a series called Historically Black. And alternative reading of the guest will be Angela Davis. Forecast for tonight, partly cloudy skies with isolated snow showers, low temperatures around 30 degrees. Forecast for Friday, numerous snow and rain showers with about 1 inch of snow expected, high temperatures in the mid-30s. Forecast for Friday night, numerous snow showers with about 1 inch of snow expected, lows in the mid-20s. Forecast for Saturday, scattered snow showers with high temperatures in the mid-30s.